Welcome to another episode of Go, Go, Grow. This is the podcast for anyone who's looking to scale their company, whether you are a startup, a second stage company, or a scale up. If you're looking to grow your company and your revenue, you're in the right place. Today, I have the extreme pleasure of being joined by Greg Grant. How are you today, Greg?
I am doing wonderful. How about you?
Oh, fabulous. You know, has it been 6 months since we met?
About 6 months.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So let me tell y'all a little bit about Greg. He's dynamic. I'll tell you that. He's dynamic. He has been an entrepreneur. He's been an educator. He is now in government working for legislation for small business owners, not just in Jacksonville where we are, but in the Southeast, in different regions across the country, and throughout the United States. So listen up, folks. This is valuable. Okay. So, Greg, one of the things that I love talking to you about is growing small businesses. So I'm going to give you a formal introduction here of who you are and what you do. Okay. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
Okay. Okay. So, you helped me shorten your title because you've got like 15 of them. So you are the director of the Office of Equal Business Opportunity for the City of Jacksonville.
That is correct.
So you work with Mayor Donna Deegan.
Yes.
Okay. So here's the other 15 titles. You're in the Office of Economic Development, and you are the Administrative Director for the Jacksonville Small and Emerging Businesses.
Correct. Jacksonville Small and Emerging Business Program.
Okay. So your ears probably burn because I talk about you and JSEB all the time. Can you tell us what JSEB is? And that kind of will frame a lot of what we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. So the Equal Business Opportunity Division was created roughly about 20 years ago to really help our small business community compete fairly on city contracts. And within that program, the JSEB certification was born. And so that JSEB certification was a way for us to vet companies to ensure that they were set up properly in some biz, make sure that they are a legitimate company because they're representing the city. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that whatever is happening in the city is dynamic and it is being completed by vetted business owners. And so the JSEB certification, we have really honed it in into five categories. And those five categories are legislation, education, community, capital, and contracts. And by helping businesses in those five distinct areas, we create a community that thrives in the small business economics of Duval County. And the point of today really is to support the mayor's vision of making Jacksonville the small business capital of the Southeast. And this is a unique program amongst the United States. There is no other program like this in the United States that helps support that type of vision.
Yet. Now, in the Greg Grant vision, that yet is just a placeholder, right?
That is correct. So I look at Jacksonville as a leader or a trailblazer for ensuring that small businesses are stable, sustainable and scalable if they desire it. And this framework, although is being born out of Jacksonville, Florida, and supported by our wonderful leaders here in Jacksonville, the plan is to collaborate with the other cities, and it becomes a state program at some point, hopefully, and inspire also the nation and other cities and states around the nation.
Okay. Thank you for expanding upon that. So, audience, when I talk about what's happening in Jacksonville, and one of the main reasons that I relocated to Jacksonville That's why. It's for the resources that are so plentiful down here. It's the community.
Yes.
That is so present and active and willing to help. It is people like you, Greg, people like Sonia Marchisello, who was guest for episode number one.
Awesome.
Nicole Mobley, episode number two.
Yes.
Chris Budahas, which is upcoming. Steve Strum, which is recording next week.
Awesome.
So it is leaders like this who move that needle forward. And when I say needle, I'm talking about a seismographic needle. It is not just Jacksonville. So if you see Jacksonville coming up a lot, if you see JSEB coming up a lot in my LinkedIn posts or any content, this is representative of what's of the wave that's going through the United States.
Yes.
And on top of that wave is Greg Grant.
You're so kind.
You surf, right?
if I don't, I better learn real quick.
Yeah. So one of the things you told me when we first had our conversation was, I think you were getting ready to travel to D.C. And because we talked a little bit about your activity with legislation. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what you're doing there or what kind of the current state is in the Southeast and in the region and kind of where you see that going in other areas?
Absolutely. So when we think about small business and resourcing small business, a lot of times it's easy to confine yourself into your local resources.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't look beyond our local resources, such as, you know, what does Tallahassee have in terms of support that they can provide? How can we work collaboratively with DC? How can we work collaboratively with the other cities here in in the state of Florida? How do we work collaboratively as a unit? And when I think about the movement in Jacksonville in terms of small business economics, I really look at the entire state and I look at the country. And here are some statistics really quick. Mm-hmm. And you can fact check this as well. But the statistics are that 45% of all jobs or people in the United States are employed by small businesses. 45%. 40% of our employment are from corporations. And 15% of us work for government agencies. So if you think about that, if small businesses are responsible for 45% of the jobs in our nation, and that's mimicked in all the cities. Well, when we look at incentives, why is it that our corporations are incentivized greater than the small business community? So I'm not looking to create a competition between small business and corporations because corporations rely on small businesses. Mm-hmm. However, I do think that we should do a better job as a country, supporting our small businesses. Small businesses, in my philosophy, is the answer to many things. So when we think about all the issues that exist, such as homelessness, such as poverty, such as income, such as all these different issues, the question is, should the government create programs to do all these different things? My philosophy is that we should resource business owners to do these things because business owners are in the community. Business owners have the answers to how to service the homelessness problem, how to service different issues that happen in the nation. They just need to be resourced. And so I believe it's our fiduciary duty as a government or public servants to serve our small business owners in that aspect.
Absolutely. Everything starts at the grassroots level. Go back to 1775. What happened at the grassroots level back then? Something that changed the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely changed the world.
Yes.
So major things can happen when somebody says, I see a problem. I have a solution. And they say, okay, this is an opportunity. Let's take action. So I love the fact that you're starting at the community saying, how do we get the community involved?
Yes.
We need to give them resources. We need to give them education.
Yes.
We need to put legislation in there that protects them.
Yes.
And what was that again about capital?
Access to capital. You know, and it's interesting that, you say that, because the issue is that the answer to a lot of our problems, or I would say our citizens' wants or needs, are right in our local towns. Mm-hmm. The answer is right there. And oftentimes business owners and everyday civilians come up and say, hey, I have the solution to this issue. However, in order to execute this solution, these are the things that I need. And I think there's a false perception sometimes that if we give a entrepreneur or a small business a small grant or a loan, you know, it's, oh, we're giving them money. We're not giving them money. What we're doing is providing resource assistance so that business can serve
right.
the community. And in return, the city benefits. The ROI is the enhanced economics. And so now for every dollar that we invested, we just created a job. We just retained a job. We've stimulated spending in the local economy. Everyone wins because taxpaying dollars are being recirculated by the individual who paid taxes in the first place. And so I think it's very critical to bring these issues and bring this information to the forefront. And I appreciate platforms like this to be able to discuss this openly, because small business owners, in my opinion, do not get the recognition, and they don't get they just don't get what they deserve mm-hmm. for the hard work they put into society.
Well, a very smart lady once said, being an employee rather than an entrepreneur is the single riskiest financial decision you can make. I said that, by the way. But the problem is, unless you have the community and the resources and the education and sometimes access to that working capital, you can't achieve that. So you put yourself at financial risk. If you're truly an entrepreneur, how productive are you going to be in that corporate world?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that, because there is a research that's been done, a lot of surveys that are out in the streets. And one of the surveys amongst corporations are, what are the top skills that major corporations are looking for? And there are many surveys out there that state that 90% of major corporations, Fortune 500, Fortune 1000, Fortune 100, they are looking for employees who possess entrepreneurial skills, entrepreneurial mindset. And the question is, why? And I can tell you why. It is the speed of innovation. If a company or a corporation is not innovating every 90 days, they are falling behind in the marketplace. So in order to keep up, it has to be an entrepreneurial mindset. And really and truly, and I don't want to get off topic, but really and truly, the dynamic of workforce has changed. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's changed forever, meaning that it is no longer the big boss and the employee. It is now an employer-employee relationship, employee and employer partnership, because we need employees to act in an entrepreneurial manner to have sustainability in business. You know, we hear the headlines all the time that, oh, there's a staffing crisis and we have a hard time hiring people. Well, the people who have a hard time hiring folks are those who haven't changed their mindset in which they hire them. You're not hiring people to tell them what to do. You're hiring people so you can tell you what to do.
See, that what you described initially, that's the ideal. The vast majority of companies are not there yet, because this is me projecting here, but it's because they are led by owners, by executives who are still in that mindset of, I know what to do and you just need to do what I tell you to do. I cannot tell you the number of times I have been brought on board, whether it's by an employer or by a client. And then they say, well, I didn't hire you for your expertise. I hired you to execute what I want you to execute.
Yes.
And then Michelle exits stage left.
And you know, we're finding that to be, I think that's a more common phenomenon today than ever before, because there are so many options today that are available that wasn't before. I mean, you can literally make money from your cell phone, six figures, literally from your cell phone. So to me, it becomes more of a partnership when I hire someone. And I'll give this tidbit. When I teach entrepreneurship to business owners, one of the things I talk about is what I call the SEC system, which is SEC. And that means have a relationship with a supplier, an employee, and a consultant, independent contractors. The thing about that is how we engage those relationships. And when we look at the employee relationship, the question should be not me evaluating you as the employee. As an employee, I want you to evaluate me as the employer.
Wow.
Am I resourcing you to grow in this company? Am I making sure that you have everything you need to service my customers properly? Because if I am making sure that you are growing, making sure that you are happy, I don't have to worry about the other things. And so when we look at even evaluations, I believe the company should be evaluated by the employee, not the other way around. And if we did that, we'll see greater retention rates.
Spot on. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this this isn't something I had planned to talk about, but I think it dovetails very nicely into what we're talking about. There are so many people out there that either don't realize they're entrepreneurs, or they should be entrepreneurs and they don't think it's viable for them. And there's opportunities out there. You just need to find it. In fact, I mentioned Nicole. She's a dynamo. The title of her episode was, I think, either find a way or make an opportunity. She's got a couple of businesses that are just doing phenomenally well. And her superpower is if she sees something that needs to be done, she's going to do it. So I think you've talked about this too. If you, and you call it an unsolicited proposal, if you see a problem that you can solve, don't wait to be asked, or don't wait for a bid or an opening.
Correct.
Say, hey, here's my solution.
Absolutely. And just kind of speaking on that, and I know Nicole very well. She's a phenomenal entrepreneur. We met many years ago. But what I can say about entrepreneurship, I always like to start with the definition of entrepreneurship. And I know it varies depending on who you speak with.
Yeah.
But for me, it's very simple. An entrepreneur is a person who solves problems. And when we talk about solving problems, anybody and everybody is an entrepreneur. In fact, everyone is an entrepreneur. Whether you're a mother, a father, you're solving problems at home. You're solving problems all day, every time you make a decision. When you decide to use entrepreneurship as a business owner, I'm going to add to that definition. You're now saying, I'm going to solve problems at a profit. That's the difference. Everyone is an entrepreneur, but when you decide to use entrepreneurship as a business owner, you're now saying I'm solving a problem at a profit.
Yeah, because my cats don't pay me when I clean up their hairballs.
That's correct. That's correct.
Solve that problem, but no pay.
Yeah. So when we start talking about how to solve problems at a profit, entrepreneurs, when we talk about the mindset, entrepreneurs don't have the luxury of, let me just sit and wait till the perfect solicitation falls out of the sky. or let me just sit back and wait till the perfect opportunity float across my desk. That is not entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurs create.
Yeah.
They create solutions. But as a business, they create solutions at a profit. So that's why I believe in the power of unsolicited proposals. Let me tell you how I can solve that problem. And by the way, I can give you the price if you want it. And to me, that is the essence of entrepreneurship as a business owner, mm-hmm. as well as entrepreneurship without being a business owner.
Well, you certainly reduce your competition that way.
Yes.
You stand
out.
Absolutely. One of the things we've talked about previously also is entrepreneurial wellness.
Yes.
And I definitely want to touch on that. Mm-hmm. I've shared my personal situation being bipolar and having ADHD and both the positive impact and the challenges that it's brought me as an entrepreneur. And when you are an entrepreneur, that's something that you need to consider. Again, the importance of community.
Yes.
As a resource.
Yes.
But you shared with me something that you coach entrepreneurs or educate them, since you are also an educator, and we'll come back to that too. Yes. What do you tell them needs to be part of their planning?
Absolutely. So as a consultant, as a private consultant, I've consulted many business owners from, I would say, from ideation all the way up to some of the larger corporations that I don't need to name. I've also consulted business owners when I was part of the SBDC. And so, again, working with a wide variety of business owners. So I was able to see novice business plans. I was able to see very complex business plans. And so not all business plans are created equal. However, there are some unconventional things that I always look for in a business plan that I think most entrepreneurs and business professionals don't think about. What they tend to focus on are your basic mechanics, such as your executive summary, your vision, your mission, you know, your staffing, your financial forecast, you know, all of those basic components. To me, I really consider all those things as the bones. Most people consider that as the meat. I don't. I see all that as every business plan going to have those things.
Yeah.
I look for the things that are uncommon, what makes you stand out. And when I look at those business plans, I look for things like, well, what is your entrepreneurship wellness plan? What is your succession plan? What is your exit strategy? I see those components missing out of generally 8 out of 10 business plans I've ever looked at. The wellness component is very important because if the entrepreneur is working 20 hours a day or is not thinking properly, not eating the way they should eat and just not taking care of themselves, they're not going to be functioning at optimal level in their business, and their business is not going to go as far as it could. That's a possibility. But the other part of it leads to some poor decision making because you're not at your optimal working condition.
Absolutely.
So having an entrepreneurial wellness plan or a wellness plan for yourself as the owner of the business is important. However, that's half the battle. The other half is, what is the wellness plan for your staff? Because your staff needs to be functioning at probably a higher level than the business owner.
Right.
So they can perform well. So how are we taking care of their mental health and how we're taking care of their physical health, how we're taking care of their financial health, their stress levels as well. And I think there should be a plan in there for that. And we talk about retention. That's another retention point. But it's a point that is very important, especially in the microwave society we're in right now. We want everything instantly. We want instant food. We want instant money. We want instant health. But we have to have a plan for it in order for it to work for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I think that's becoming more in vogue in the corporate world.
Yes.
Where you have to be very competitive to get the best employees mm-hmm. and to retain them.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of focus on, hey, we have a gym on site, or we'll reimburse a mental health benefit, or, you know, we have an ESP plan or something of that nature. But when you are the business owner, like you said, your head's down 20 hours a day.
Absolutely. And I wanted to just say this one thing. And I think I mentioned it to you maybe at one point, but I did a tour of a ViStar, of a ViStar credit union. I won't mention which location, but I did a tour and I was blown away. And I was blown away because when I did that tour, I went on one of their floors and there were sleep pods, a room that was a sleep pod. You are allowed to take a nap. There is a room that's shaped with hammocks, like you're on a beach, that you can sit there and have meetings in. There are ping pong ball machines, and there's racquetball tables. There's a ice cream maker and all that stuff there. And this is where they have their meetings. And, you know, it made me think that this is true. I'm a type of person, me personally, I like to think in quiet, like, when there is no noise, there is nothing happening. That's why I do my best thinking. So I would probably go into that nap pod, you know, in the middle of the day and just think about that. You know, some of us, you know, sometimes you take a nap and you wake up and you're like, that's the answer to that
yes.
problem, or that's the answer I was looking for. And all it took was a 30-minute nap.
Yeah.
So being able to appeal to individuals' learning style or idea style of how they conduct meetings or conduct, you know, using their higher levels of their brain. It's just, I think is a critical thing to consider.
As we have cross-generational working environments, I don't think I've ever seen such distinctive work styles, so many of them in the workforce at one time. I mean, it used to be just boomers and Gen X. And now you have four generations of completely different work styles and thought processes and approaches and work requirements in the workforce.
Yes.
And as an employer, not only do you have to attract the best of the best, regardless of which generation they are.
Yeah.
But you've got to make sure they're in an environment that they can communicate and collaborate together.
Yes.
Same thing applies to entrepreneurship.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. If you're looking for the best of the best, you've got to make the team gel.
Yes. And that's not an easy skill. You know, I have to say, you know, I've had many learning experiences myself, you know, having to do that in the companies that I've owned over the years. And I was not the best leader in especially early on. You know, it was my way or the highway, right?
We all learn.
Yeah, I think we all learn. And then I started realizing, wait a minute, no, it's our way. You know, it's our highway. And once you really shift that mindset, you see productivity change. One of the things that I recently saw, and I think it may have been on LinkedIn, but a gentleman was doing a presentation and basically it was based on hiring a person based on their proficiency skills versus their interpersonal skills.
Oh, yeah.
And so the question was, well, you can hire a person who is very proficient, who's an expert in what they do, but their interpersonal skills are, you know, they can't work in a team. they talk down to people, all that kind of stuff. But then you have this employee who is kind of very high on the interpersonal skill, but they are not the top performer. You know, they are a little bit above average, but not the top. But that's the person that you want, because this other person quite naturally is, you know, kind of a choice favorite word, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And so I believe entrepreneurs are that way as well. You know, there are some entrepreneurs who are so into themselves that they don't have the best team building skills and the best communication skills as they're building their business and as they are even partnering with other entrepreneurs. And I do believe that that contributes to a barrier of failure.
I've seen that. And after one in particular that I'm thinking of, after they lost 75% of their staff and cut their revenue in half, the light turned on and they said, so that's how leadership works. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit about what uniquely makes you so qualified for what it is you're doing here. Okay.
That's a good question.
So I'm going to kind of preface this. All right. So 4 years in the Army.
Yes.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And the service and sacrifice of your family.
Thank you.
Absolutely. About 20 years as an entrepreneur.
Yes.
How many businesses?
Roughly about seven or
okay.
eight.
Okay. You have a business administration bachelor's.
Yes.
MBA.
Yes.
And you're a doctoral candidate for entrepreneurship.
Correct.
Is that right?
That's correct.
So you do it, you say it, you speak it, you teach it.
Yes. Yes. You nailed it.
And then you legislate it.
That's it.
So what's next?
Great question. So one of the things that is really near and dear to me is policy, which is why I'm in public policy. And I must say that it was not an intentional aspiration to be in government. Because initially I just wanted to help entrepreneurs be successful. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you how this journey unfolded. So I started out as a practitioner of entrepreneurship. I come from an entrepreneurial family. So I started there. So just kind of learning entrepreneurship through the School of Hard Knocks like we all do. And a lot of learning experiences along the way. And so I did that for a while, decided to go into the military, was able to engage leadership there. I was able to lead squads, learn how to work with the diversity of folks from all over the world, you know, in your squad. And you get to learn the team building, the camaraderie, the leadership. And so I do attribute some great lessons in the military from that. When I exited the military, I went into corporate America. So I worked for primarily in the retail industry and in senior leadership roles for a variety of retailers here in the city of Jacksonville. What that did, it allowed me to understand the inner workings of corporate, you know, how to take ideas in the corporate environment and make them successful, get buy-in, because that it's a lot of corporate bureaucracy. So get buy-in to get things done. So I learned to navigate that landscape. From there, when the recession took place in 2008, I was in a business. I had a tile contracting business at the time, closed it. And that's the time I decided to pursue higher education, because up until then, I was making a really great living at a very young age. And so until the recession happened,
that changed for a lot of us
in 2008. And I said, you know what? I need to take college really seriously now. So at that point, I decided to get a Bachelor of Science in Business Management and an MBA. And I was working at a corporate company at the same time. So my goal was, once I graduated, was to start another business. But this time I went gangbusters on starting businesses. I started like 5 businesses literally within months of each other in multiple industries. And those industries are commercial cleaning, tax business, rent a car company, truck leasing, several different organizations. And across all those businesses, I had a total of roughly about 70 to 80 employees across all of those businesses altogether. And I ended up reaching a certain level of just business success in many different ways. And I began thinking of, you know, how can I help other business owners navigate, you know, some of the things that I went through, and how can I help business owners prevent some of those pitfalls, you know, that I experienced and watch other colleagues experience as well. And even lessons I learned from my mentors throughout the space. And as I started reflecting. I guess we all reach an age of reflection, right? I exited all of my companies and I went into education. And going into education, I was able to work with college level students and really kind of helping to give back in an education environment. But that was all theory, you know. Now, part of my lessons included a lot of practice, mm-hmm. but still it's a lot of theory. So as I started working with the Small Business Development Center and the government side of it, it was more working with practitioners. And it was interesting because the students had the theory, but the entrepreneurs had the practice. So in reverse, one didn't have the practice and the other didn't have the theory.
So how do you bridge that gap?
Right. And
because you were an adjunct professor at 4 different universities in 5 years concurrently?
Yeah, it was 3. So, so 3 different universities. And when this position became available, I saw it as a unique opportunity to bridge the gap of theory and practice, leveraging resources of the city. And what I can tell you is going very well. So taking, you know, going from being a practitioner, an educator, a consultant, and now into public policy, is taking all that experience and making it the bridge between that theory and practice. And I'm finding it to be very impactful in the lives of entrepreneurs. And I always say it's not just me, it's the entire community. It's business leaders that are involved, the city government mm-hmm. leaders are involved. You know, there are other stakeholders and other business owners that are involved. You mentioned Sonia, yourself, allowing this platform. It's about us working together. And one of my taglines is unity in the community.
Oh, I like that.
Gregory Grant can't do it alone. Michelle can't do it alone. Sonia, Nicole, but all of us together is what makes Jacksonville special. And that's how we become the small business capital of the Southeast. You know, the secret sauce isn't the programs. The secret sauce is us unifying and working with each other.
That's awesome. Yeah. You inspire me, Greg.
Thank you.
So I want to go ahead and kind of wrap a few things up, but I want to stress all the stuff that we're talking about here in Jacksonville is some of it's being done in other areas. I know the state of Texas, many municipalities in that area or metro areas in that area, particularly San Antonio, mm-hmm. just a hotbed of resources. If you check out the Edward Lowe Foundation, they support many, many organizations across the U.S. I think Kansas City has quite a bit going on. So if you're not in Jacksonville, don't think this is an exclusive club. It may be the best club. Okay. And a lot of that is because of you. But there are initiatives like this throughout the United States. Get involved. Unity is in the community.
That's it.
Absolutely. So find your community. Absolutely. I don't care if you are in a tent in the middle of the wilderness, somewhere in Yellowstone, which I don't think you're allowed to camp there. We won't tell anybody. Find your community. Yes. Be involved. There's resources out there. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of tapping into them.
Absolutely.
And you need to not only advocate for yourself, but advocate for others because it will come back and support you as well. I want to stress again, entrepreneurial wellness for you, your team, your business.
Yes.
And connect with us, both of us. We both like to help and give resources and support. I mentioned about being bipolar and ADHD. It is part of my passion to help entrepreneurs that that may struggle but want to thrive with that. Please reach out to me. I'll be your buddy. I'll be your mentor, your friend, your coach. And let's get it.
I love it. You mentioned something I just want to also kind of throw in there. So I'm working on a project currently, which is called Entrepreneurs with Disabilities.
Oh, wonderful.
And so this is a project that was really I would say, born out of passion for me, because there are most entrepreneurs have some type of disability, rather if they want to admit it or not. Specifically, even if it's ADD, ADHD, you know, whatever it is, there is something. However, a lot of times entrepreneurs who may look, may not be visually or physically.
You may look at me and say, she doesn't have a disability.
There you go. And the thing is, you know, I've worked with entrepreneurs who are in wheelchairs, entrepreneurs who may not be physically appealing in the way that we think they should be, but are some of the most brilliant and intelligent people I've ever spoken with. And some of them have money. And when you help them be business owners and be entrepreneurs, you will be surprised at how many people they employ, mm-hmm. but don't get the recognition because they're judged by how they look. And so we're looking to create programs specifically for entrepreneurs with disabilities. We're running our very first cohort, hopefully this fall, no later than the spring of 2025. And we hope that that can be a model and an example for the nation of supporting entrepreneurs who have disabilities.
So I'm going to do a shameless plug here, and you know what I'm going to plug. I've introduced you to one of my clients. My client is, of course, Joe Jamison. Yes. He's the founder of Visitable. So it's Visit Able, mm-hmm. one word, Visitable. And he and his company provide disability inclusion training for the really any type of company, whether it is a for-profit company, corporation. I'm working with him a lot on museums, attractions, historical sites, preservation societies, excellent. Government, healthcare, travel, tourism, that sort of thing, because so many individuals that have whatever type of disability challenge, they want to visit, they want to fully participate, fully engage. And sometimes they don't have that accessibility or accommodation that they need. You had mentioned so many entrepreneurs have a disability. 27% of all American adults, 27% have some sort of disability. They are the largest minority group in the U.S.
Wow.
The largest. So they have the desire to work. They have the desire to produce. They have passion. They have brilliance. They have energy. They're perfect for entrepreneurs, for entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
So I am thrilled to hear this. And let me know how I can help. Let me know how I can serve.
I sure will. Again, unity in the community.
Unity in the community. Okay. Anything else that you want to share?
You know, one thing I do want to share specifically to two things. One thing specifically to those who are located in Jacksonville. If you have not taken a look at the JSEP Entrepreneurship Initiative, I highly recommend it.
Yes.
There are a lot of enhanced resources in place specifically for our local businesses in Jacksonville. And one of the things I can say when we think about the JSEP certification, a lot of times it's easy to get caught up into, oh, I want a contract. I'm doing this for a contract. But I want all entrepreneurs to consider that sometimes it's not about the contract. It's the preparation resources mm-hmm. that help you get the contract. And so in the JSEP program, we have a lot of preparation resources to help entrepreneurs get contracts, but most importantly, be able to perform well on those contracts. For those who are not in the Jacksonville area, in every single state, there is a SBDC, a Small Business Development Center. Please connect with those folks. They are great resources across the nation in terms of preparation resources. Most of them have a separate division called Apex Accelerators, which helps with contracting and that type of thing. So that's what I wanted to say.
You're just a wealth of opportunity and truly a great human. And I so appreciate being part of the Greg Grant universe.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us. Absolutely. You'll have Greg's contact information, all the resources we mentioned. I'm going to throw Joe Jameson and Visitable's information in there as well. If you found value here, and I can't imagine that there's not a nugget or two there that was of value to you, please share it with another entrepreneur, another small business owner. This is the stuff that can change the direction of your company. Comment, like us, subscribe to us. Join our mailing list on gogogrowshow.com. And please join us for the next episode. We are so happy to have you here. Let's go grow together. Thank you.